Hello everyone and welcome to Journey to Success Radio, a show featuring people and companies who are making a positive contribution to the world. This show will help you learn how to apply success principles in every area of your life so that you can make the most out of your skills and talents and accomplish more of your goals. To find out more about the show, please visit www.journeytosuccessradio.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor and resiliency expert. And my purpose in life is to encourage people to live positively with and through the many and varied challenges of life. This is an exciting show for me because I have my amazing friend Brad Zolas co-hosting. Introduce yourself, please, Brad, and introduce our guest and your friend.
Thank you, Tom. It's always an honor to team up with you, my friend. My name is Brad Zolas. And if you don't know who I am, I'm the international best-selling author of Liquid Leadership, which delves deeply into new management styles for the 21st century. I've also done TEDx talks, and I've worked with Tony Robbins recently. And my subject that I usually focus on is the generational issues in today's world. And that leads us to today's guest. This young man is something else. And I got to tell you, Tom, you may not know this, but Tom used to complain about millennials till he met me, right, Tom?
I thought I was a crotchety old man.
Well, you still are a crotchety old man, but I wanted to point out he learned a little bit about millennials just because of me. And every once in a while, you run into a superstar, and you kind of scratch your head and you go, man, this person has what it takes. And I met Lee probably, I think it was 2-3 years ago, through Wendy Schweifler. She was doing an interview, and I got on the call, and we started talking together, and I got to meet Lee. So let me introduce Lee real quick. Lee Constantine started in content marketing, got into journalism for a bit, owned a magazine, did lead generation for a consulting firm, and now writes for funded startups and helps unique authors get their books published. He is head of author success at Publicizer, a Kickstarter meets Tinder for publishing company, and I'm also involved with Publicizer. They're helping me do Liquid Leadership 2.0, and let's welcome to the show somebody that's amazing to me, Lee Constantine.
Yeah, Brad, thanks for, Brad and Tom, thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be talking to you guys.
Sure, Lee. Hey, I want to say thank you. The Publicizer model is amazing, and I've had a great experience so far. We're not done with my campaign, but man, it's exciting to see this sort of crowdfunding model where, for those of you who are listening who don't understand, Publicizer actually takes authors and their books and puts it out to the marketplace, and if there's enough crowdfunding kind of interest in it, then there becomes a feeding frenzy with other publishers of books. So it really is a different model, right, Lee?
Yeah, so, Publicizer is kind of like a validation or a method of validation for an author's book. So I get to work with a lot of cool authors, yourself included, and it's a lot of fun to see how authors are able to get their book out there, and then once they reach like a level of validation in the market, we start connecting with publishers, and we get to like be present with the authors that entire experience. So it's really, really cool.
Well, very cool. I subscribed, and I've been loving the emails, and I purchased a pile of Brad's books, so it must have gone to you, so amazing. Now, this is a mistake I make lots of times, so I'm not going to do it this time. Often I don't give the person's website until the end of the show, and I'll give it because I can speak Canadian and American. So let me share it. So it's Publishizer, so Publishizer. E-R, or for Americans, it's I-Z-E-R. but it's publish and then I Z E R. What do you guys say, Z or Z?
It's we say Z, publish Schizer. So
okay,
actually,
so the rest of the world says Z because I Googled this recently. But amazing website, and what an amazing idea you've got there.
Yeah, it's publish Schizer. I mean, founded from a guy, Vincent. He's the CEO, the founder. I started working with him for quite a while ago. And yeah, just a lot of cool things have been happening over the past year and a half. And yeah, Publishizer. It's a great platform for authors. And we've seen some really cool things happen in the past 6 months.
And a hot website.
Yeah, it's brand new. So basically, the websites have gone through like a lot of revamps in the past. Again, in the past 6 months, it used to be like really like driven on this proposal for book authors to put up their proposal, and then we'll query that directly to publishers right on the platform. But it's kind of like an old school UI, so we updated it to just a really forward looking like bootstrap a UI that really makes authors' books look awesome. We've taken away a lot of stuff and streamlined the entire process. So a lot of good feedback so far. But thank you.
Yeah, I love it. So because I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor, I got to ask, have you read Think and Grow Rich?
Yeah, of course. I actually think Think and Grow Rich was one of the very first books I picked off a bookshelf, like really interestingly. Like when I first started reading books, I would go to Barnes & Noble. Obviously, for some reason, this book was like front and center in the business section. And yeah, that was one of my first books, I think, ever. I don't want to say first ever, but I've definitely read the book a long, long time ago. Probably worth reading again.
Definitely. And the Napoleon Hill Foundation, one of their concerns for the future is that young people may not read it because it has examples from, you know, the early 1900s and people that they don't necessarily associate with. So exciting to hear that a millennial read the book and loved it.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I think some books like Napoleon Hill's are there's timeless concepts in them that just, they don't change over time. But I think the experiences that generations have to, I guess, apply those principles to their time or their lives, I think that requires like updates over time, or that requires people to expand on his idea in new books or in new ways, or in new ways of getting in, let's say, millennials' hands.
Yeah.
Right. Brad, I'll let you ask a question, because otherwise I'm going to hog this interview.
Well, I wanted to agree with Lee on this, because when you first start reading Napoleon Hill's work, you go, oh, okay, I get this. And it is written in a style that harkens back to the 1930s. But it's a starting point. And a lot of things have been reinvented since then that add on to this. And I'm a big fan of this. This is almost like, you know, you go back and if you look at, let's say, automobile engine theory, and you read the works of Henry Ford, but then you move forward in time and you look at, you know, Elon Musk at Tesla. And so you need the body of the work, I think, to understand for yourself individually what success is. And, you know, for you, what I've always found with Lee is, you may not know this, Tom, but Lee and I do conference calls on Skype and, you know, video calls, and we're all the, and Lee is always in a different place on planet Earth. So do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because we're living in a day and age where you can be a digital nomad, and, you know, the economy happens wherever you go to. Am I right, Lee?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say... like for a long time, like I heard the term digital nomad when I started traveling a bit and doing my job from anywhere I wanted. And I don't know if like I love the term or if I could like call myself that an actual nomad, but I think it's been such a long time and I've kind of gone to so many different places and I've been able to do the same exact thing and be just as effective or as productive anywhere. So like I think I rightly own like that term now, digital nomad. But yeah, the idea of like traveling around, or not necessarily traveling, even just work on your own terms. It's like bringing a healthier work-life balance into your life, where you don't live to work. You actually work to live. And I think that's kind of the new idea that maybe more millennials have, but just more people in general are accepting this kind of lifestyle. And it's going to be hard to go back. I don't think I will ever go back to, let's say, maybe not corporate, but I mean, if I don't have the freedom I have now, it's hard to give something like that up once you've experienced it for a long time.
Right. And now you're talking to an old person here, and I work entirely from home now. And I just realized today I haven't been outside the condo since Sunday afternoon. So I was like, I better go to the dry cleaner or make up a reason to get out of the condo. But also in the summer, we go to nice cottages on the weekend and trailers and camping. I plop up my computer on a Saturday morning before everyone gets up. I update my website, respond to emails. And so I had to get used to in the middle of the day, if I was like, oh, I drove my mother-in-law to the doctor's and I'm thinking, I should be working. It's like working hours here. Like, oh, what am I doing taking a break? And, you know, going to Whole Foods, Kim asked me, my wife, can you go pick up this? And I'm like, it's during the business day. But it's so amazing. If you can work any 24/7, 7 days a week, there is no business hours, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it depends on, you know, what kind of lifestyle you have or what that freedom means to you. I mean, I have probably like, I like to say like the healthier work-life balance, like more so than I ever had before. Like, but I guess that's what I want. And if I'm working less and being more productive, that's really good. So therefore, like if I travel to Bali or if I travel to Bangkok or Peru and I work from there and I can explore the culture, I mean, that's the freedom I want. But at the same time, if your goal is also to grow your company by X amount every month, or if it's to, I think the point is like your goals come into play quite a bit and you have to decide if they're big enough to maintain this lifestyle or to go to where you want to go in the next 2 to 5 years, let's say.
So you're like Tim Ferriss, right? The 4-hour work week.
Yeah, exactly. Tim Ferriss. I mean, he started this whole, maybe he didn't start the idea, but he was the first one to pioneer that, like on a mass level. And I think everyone's read that at this point. And there's been hundreds of variations, like book-wise and podcasts and blogs that I just speak about the same thing. And yeah, I mean, once you get into this freedom economy, I think they're calling it, I mean, and you experience some success or you're able to do it, like I said, it's very hard to go back from that.
Well, Daniel Pink called it the free agent nation. And I think the tone of this entire podcast really with you, Lee, is this is about being disruptive in the traditional markets and still make a living doing what you love to do. A lot of baby boomers, myself included, that every time Tom says he's an old man, I cringe because I think Tom and I are the exact same age. but the thing is we were always taught you must go to an office and sit there, and from 9 to 5, you must work and get work done. And then at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, you go home, and there was a point in our lives where when you left work, you didn't work. You went home. And you sat and watched TV with your wife, your parents, your friends, or whatever. But somehow when the computer came into the household and laptops got invented, this solid line between work and not work now became very fuzzy and blurry. And I think your generation really is the first generation to try and figure out what that time management model looks like for you. And maybe you can tell a few people who are listening, Lee, especially boomers who may not be able to let go, who still are in that 9 to 5, I got to fill this bucket called time, you know, 8 hours of time to fill in this bucket, and maybe give a word of advice on how this new work style, how we can actually do it, maybe.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's been like a lot of studies going around that they get passed around that so much where, you know, mainly Google is like one of the first people to like be outspoken about this, where actually if you can take away work time from employees and give them time to work on their own projects and say, you're not allowed to work for Google on Fridays. You have to come into the Google campus, but you can't work on anything Google related. Like it improves morale, but at the same time, you only have those first 4 days, Monday through Thursday, to get their work done. And they found out that they're actually more productive, or as productive as if they worked 5 days. So people, like, if you have a 9 to 5 or a specific duration of time to work, you're going to like do things to fill that time instead of being as productive as possible. Right. So I think that's what more people are starting to realize. And if you have a laptop, it just makes things, I guess, easier because you're always connected. Yeah. Even with your mobile phone, you can work from it or you can communicate. I mean, people can take off the last 3 hours of work, but then, you know, go home at 6 and start working for another 3 hours and catch up on work. Whereas I don't think you could do that as easily, I guess, before now. And I think on the flip side of that, you get a lot of entrepreneurs and people who love to work and they just don't stop working, which is a good thing.
Right.
But I think once they find out, when they disconnect and they leave the laptop at work and they bring a book home instead, it's so much more fulfilling. And you find out, okay, if I'm not going to bring my laptop home, I have to find a way to be productive at work. And once you figure that out, like, wow, I can be productive in 2 days instead of 5 days, and have way more free time and more freedom than I originally did.
Right.
I've started to work a little bit more that way as well, Lee, because I had a couple of days where I didn't feel like doing anything. It's the summer here. We got a little bit of a heat wave going. And I thought, you know what, let me take a break. And you know this, Tom, the entrepreneur in me, my dad yelling at me,
right,
are in my head. And I'm like, you know, you need to get up off the couch, bucko. You know, these things are going in my head. And I'm just saying, well, yeah, but I'm a 21st century entrepreneur. But then the next 2 days, I got up and I had it in me to just crank out so much work. And I did. And I did more in 2 days than I did in four, just sitting in front of the computer trying to fill time. So it's a different type of time management. And I think, Lee, you've given our listeners something to really glom onto and kind of go, okay, I'm going to try this and see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm loving it.
Yeah,
I'm loving it.
Take it over. You're the next question.
Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, most of his writings, they're really aimed at entrepreneurs, as you know, Lee. And it's very rare that an entrepreneur comes up with a brand new, never before seen concept or idea. They do things that have already been done. And although you publish Sizer is cool and different, it's been done, but you're doing it in a different way. Is that right?
Well, I mean, authors have published books before. I mean, there's different avenues to go about that. You connect it and do creator sales. So, like, what authors are doing is not necessarily different. I think just the medium or the means by which they reach a goal is is more efficient, or it results in a better outcome in less time, let's say.
Right. Let's say, like, when I was young, or back in the old days, if you wanted to publish a book, like, you had to know a publisher, and, you know, it better be a bestseller, and it was not easy to publish a book. But in today's day and age, there are all kinds of options for publishing books, and yours is the coolest one I've come across.
Yeah,
I mean, self-publishing is a big deal. Self-publishing, like the ebook way, or even like a print copy, you can go up on Amazon. You can actually, I think, even by the end of 2017, start putting your books in actual Barnes & Noble bookstores without a publisher. But again, you have to like apply to do this. It's just becoming like more easy for anyone who can write a book to get their book out there.
Right.
But, which is a very good thing, because it's very difficult. 96% of authors just don't get their book published. They're not able to if they want to. So, like these new ways to get the book out there are really good. It lowers like the rejection rate. It increases books out in the market. But at the same time, that still doesn't have the credibility as you would have with the publisher. So there's certain things, and that's the angle with Publishizer, where we're not advocates of self-publishing. Like, you can self-publish, that's great. But if you want to be like in the top 4% or in the top 10% of authors, getting a publishing deal is the way to go. And you have to take it like very methodically and do the right thing. So that's exactly what we help authors do. And a lot of authors who just go and self-publish remain uneducated about how to methodically get your book published in the right way.
Right, right. And if you have a publisher, that's the best way to do it.
What I like
if you
about
have
a... what I love about Publicizer is it creates a feeding frenzy for your book.
Right.
You know, I wanted to do Liquid Leadership 2.0, and I approached Lee with, hey, I'd like to relaunch my book, but I'd like a publisher that wasn't, say, a hybrid, and that's where you pay to play, basically. And what happened is, so far, we're right in the middle of my campaign, and I think I have the most publishing houses that are looking at my work.
That's right.
That you've seen so far. So this creates a market that the publishing houses can see and start saying, you know what, we're going to get involved with this author. So they can, it's really reinventing the model of publishing, because publishing in the past, you pointed some of this out, Tom, they had to pick you.
Right.
Or you had to earn it. You know, that's why you saw so many New York Times journalists or somebody who'd been on television writing books, because they already had a following, and a lot of times they didn't even write their own book. They hired somebody to write the book,
right.
And then they would create a marketplace. But, you know, I think it was back in 2006, 2007, about 78,000 books got published a year. And now we have roughly, and my stats might be wrong on this, but we have 4 million books published a year in the United States.
Wow.
And it's because of, you know, platforms like CreateSpace and things like that that allow you to self-publish. And, you know, a lot of people just want to write a book. They don't care about getting in the bookstores. But for you and me and other entrepreneurs who, let's say, they want to have a speaking career, or they want to be business people who want to be taken seriously, getting your book on the shelves of Barnes & Noble is incredibly important for credibility. And you know, when we were in the green room earlier, Lee, you were discussing a little bit about this, but like, you feel all entrepreneurs should at least write a book. Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, writing a book is the best way to get your unique idea to more people. I mean, even a blog or a podcast, which is so common for entrepreneurs to do these days, like, it's so saturated. And even now, like, the ebook world, or even like the self-publishing world, where anyone can just publish the book on Amazon and get sales. It's very common and popular for CEOs and entrepreneurs, anyone, to get that message out there. But at the same time, in order to like really stand out and stand above, like you said, if you want to get speaking gigs, you want to increase your speaking rate or get more credibility in the marketplace, or you know, you need a publisher to help you do that. Or if you want to drive more money back to your business, or you want to increase like the status of everything you're doing, yeah, a publisher is going to help you do that. Whereas something that's available for anyone to do and get their book out there is just not going to have that prestige that a publisher can bring you.
Right. I agree.
Right. And like you said, in the past, it was, I mean, there was a hierarchy. There was publishers, and there was lit agents with editors. And then there was authors just always trying to throw their proposals at them and get them rejected left and right. And it was always the publisher or the lit agent choosing the author. And there was, the buying power was absolutely ridiculous for the publisher and very bad for the author. So the author always got the wrong end of the stick. Very low percentage of book sales through just distribution. So we're starting to flip that on its head, where authors are able to choose from a list of, let's say, 10 publishers who have already expressed interest in them. So the buying power is definitely going back into the author's hands when you validate your idea with a great-looking book and some pre-order sales.
And let me throw this in. You know, some of you that might be listening, you might think, you know, a person who sells a million copies of a book, they must be sitting pretty. Well, you may not realize, but the publishing house may only give the author $1 per book, depending on the book, whereas they keep the rest. And if you have a $21 or $29 book, and you get $1 per book, that's kind of not a great thing. And we're in a day and age where productivity and being able to produce one of these things and have it printed and all this allows you to keep more of the royalties and the price per book sold. But these platforms are exciting, and I'm excited that Lee is involved in this, because you've had an interesting road as an entrepreneur as well to lead you to this. Am I right, Lee?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, doing a lot of writing and editing along the West Coast, and it's like for startups and again the consulting firms, and being around influencers and founders at all times. I mean, it just led into an industry that loves these people. Publishing loves influencers. They love CEOs and people with like a large platform that can make waves. So I think it was just an interesting way to join this industry from where I've been before.
All right. Now, Lee, my favorite Napoleon Hill principle of the 17, maybe not my favorite, but one that applies to me the most, is learning from adversity and defeat. And I want to hear some of those adversity stories. First of all, I'm thinking your parents. You look pretty young. I don't know how old your parents are, but they certainly would have preferred a job and a career, I imagine.
Yeah.
So there was some adversity there. And I'm sure when you first got started, even though it's a brilliant idea now, I bet at first there were some people like, are you ever going to make money at that? Or how's that going to work?
I mean, that's still a conversation that I have with my parents. I mean, I'm visiting Grand Rapids right now, which is my parents live here. I flew in from Kyiv, and then I'm gonna fly out to Peru in a month. So I'm here for a little bit visiting, and yeah, we catch up on everything that I've been doing, and you know, it's the same question over and over. Like, wow, this sounds like it's very fulfilling. You're very
right.
Happy. Like, there's a lot of potential here. And
right.
But when is that big payday gonna come? And I'm like, sometimes you don't know how to answer it. You just have to, let them know that everything's gonna be okay.
Right, right. And they're not asking necessarily believing. They're asking, thinking about, would you like a few extra bucks, Lee? And so it must be challenging. And I imagine you have friends who are taking the corporate gig and working for the man and making a few dollars, and sometimes it's hard to resist the lure.
Yeah, of course. I mean, even when I moved out to Silicon Valley after college, I was out there for a little bit doing the same thing. I mean, funded startups don't pay. They do pay well, is what I'm trying to say. But there's not as much stability. So if the company's acquired or it fails, you don't have that stability, and you're going back to like a very, you have to like use your savings, or you have low income, and you know, there's always an option to move out to the East Coast and get a job with a corporation or with the company that's done an IPO, and there's always a nudge from the parents in that direction, and I'm like, I can't do that. I know it's great and it's something that you want, but I'm just not going to do that right now.
You know, I was lucky, Lee. I was surrounded by entrepreneurs. My dad was an entrepreneur, and my mother was an entrepreneur, and my grandparents were entrepreneurs. So I was actually encouraged to do certain things. And because my grandfather was a musician, I actually saw how you could make money doing something where you played the drums, let's say. And that's a non-traditional way of making money. So it's scary for parents, I'm sure, but you did take a couple of corporate sort of side gigs. I remember I was on the, when Nate Smith of Smith Durant was doing those podcasts, Lee was instrumental in getting me to meet Nathan and also work with him on a blog and a podcast and everything. And you were kind of the major domo over there for a little while. Am I right on that one, Lee?
Yeah. I wouldn't say Smith Durant was a corporate setting. It was a corporate environment, I guess, but in no way like a corporation. It was kind of like an established business. It was a consulting firm, but it still wasn't that big. They still needed someone to come in and handle marketing and do lead generation and help with growth. So that was what I did. So I did become kind of a liaison between Smith Durant, or let's say the CEOs, and people that weren't already in their established network, like yourself. So Yeah, that did happen quite a bit. I mean, I think it's pretty common for established, not necessarily established businesses, but those that really don't have a grasp on rapid experimentation or high growth, to try new things or to be able to extend beyond their current network to grow their company. So I think that's what I brought in when I went to that consulting firm.
Right. Well, they definitely needed that, but I think, you know, this is the difference between boomers and millennials. You're more like a commando. You know where you can take your laptop and do your work and travel and go here and go there and make your living as you travel. And that's a mind shift set and a skill set shift, because boomers have gotten so used to, and even Gen Xers, going to a 9x12 office and sitting there and actually physically working, that it's hard for them maybe to make this shift. And I think it's a natural way of working for millennials that you embrace wholeheartedly, because it's the only way to work for you at this point.
Yeah, I think there's just so many tools available to us. Like, I feel lucky that I'm able to do this, that I can work from my laptop. I have skills to do so and make a living doing it. But then also, if I want to travel, there's so many co-working spaces out there, and co-working spaces are so amazing because they have these resources in the middle of nowhere that you can use to build your business and collaborate with other like-minded entrepreneurs. And it definitely wasn't as popular, or they weren't as prevalent as they are now. So definitely feel lucky to be able to do that, and that other people and industries are out there supporting this type of lifestyle.
I'm astounded in Manhattan how many temporary spaces you can rent from for very little fees. Like, we have WeWork and Workville and all these things in New York City where you can rent a desk for a month. You know, it's like $200 a month for a desk. It's great. Do you have those up in Canada?
Yeah.
We have desks in Canada, yeah.
You have desks? Good. I wasn't sure.
They've made it up here.
It is all about that productivity. I mean, I don't know if this is like a millennial mindset. I can't imagine that it is, but maybe it's just more talked about now. But if all I need to be productive, if I only want to work 20 hours a week, let's say, and still make a living, is a laptop and a rented desk in a shared space in San Francisco, then heck yeah, I'm going to do that over going to a cubicle from 9 to 5 every day.
Right. Now, I'd be remiss. Ooh, look at me trying to use fancy words. Remiss. If I didn't talk about Journeys to Success, Volume 4, Millennials Edition, coming out, I believe, September 25th. How many authors you got, Brad? I know, Lee, you have a chapter in that one. I'm looking forward to reading that. But
we have 23 authors, and they're all millennials, and they're all just like Lee. They break this a mold that everybody keeps complaining about millennials in the media, and I get tired of it, where they say they're lazy, they're entitled, they're all these things that just, you're like, you got to be kidding me. I've assembled, I think, what I would consider the A-team of millennials, and Lee, man, you, the stories you've told are just phenomenal. I want everybody to get excited because the book's coming out next month, and this is going to be exciting as far as the type of authors that we've attracted in this book.
Right, right. And it's exciting to learn about millennials. I'm way better since I met you, Brad, because I've even said and thought some of those things that you said about millennials. And so I've since learned that they just grew up different. They're a different generation, and now I know what their skill sets and their thinking is. So many things online and social media and other IT things, I have no idea, concept in the world how to do it. So I am able to hook into millennials and say, hey, what could you teach me about this? And some of them look to me for my gray hair and wisdom and experience, and sometimes I get to speak into their lives too. So I become a lot less of a crotchety old man since I met Brad.
Lee, I wanted to ask you, what are some of the things that you've observed with the older generations that kind of maybe stump you as well?
But it's hard to say. I don't know if I spend a lot of time observing the older generation. Maybe things that I'll run into here and there. I think it's hard to say, like, moving around so much. I can say that I can definitely see the older generation where I grew up in. They're not as open to the things that maybe the younger generation are open to. And I don't know if that's even, like, accurate to say. Openness is just seems to be a good one.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but one of the things that you may not realize is some of the reality that millennials talk about are experiencing, boomers don't even know it exists. So they might be arguing, like your parents might be arguing with you, Lee, about what you're doing, but they're completely unaware. To you, to them, you're just having fun. You're kind of a modern hippie to them. In some ways, and they're probably misinterpreting. And sometimes I say this to people because they see boomers and Gen Xers even as working really slow. And
right.
Not that we're working slow, it's we try to get our work done perfectly the first time.
Right. And I think your parents are probably thinking more of what you're not doing than actually what you are doing because they don't understand the what you are doing part, but they just know you're not doing what they think you should be doing that they did.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, when I came home and I started visiting, we have these conversations, and they're conversations that I guess you don't want to have, or you have to have them, and then, okay, these are done, and now we can go back to being normal again. But it just seems to happen over and over again. Like I said, with way back from after college when I didn't, you know, take a corporate job and kept going to startup life, or, you know, when I decided to keep traveling around the world instead of, again, being stable and starting something with you know, I think what I'm doing is stable, and I love that it has potential to do, like, great things. But I guess you're right. I mean, they don't see everything I see. Sometimes it's hard to communicate that and bring them on board.
Right. And, like, I'm even advanced for some of the people my age. Like, I was at a Bible study once, and someone asked me, so where is your radio station tower? I'm like, well, it's on my computer in my home office. And so... when you say you have a radio show, people think you're coming out of their squawk box on their in their car.
That's funny.
Right.
That is
where's your radio tower? Oh, it's in my car. Let me go get it.
By the way, Lee, how should people get in touch with you?
Right.
I know we talked about it at the beginning, but how should they get in touch with you?
Yeah, the best way to get in touch with me would be email. I'm at lee@publishizer.com. Like, I'm always on Publishizer, always talking to new people, not just authors, but anyone who has, like, a unique idea or story, wants to talk about, like, the life of a digital nomad or want advice about this freedom economy that I've been hearing so much about. Yeah, definitely.
And how do you spell Publishizer? It's publish, PublishIzer, IZER.com.
That's right. Lee, L-E-E, at Publishizer, like you spelled it, .com.
In Canada, that's PublishIzer.com.
Yes.
Same letter on the computer.
Magical place at Canada. It's magical up there.
Hey, go there, eh?
I can't imagine America is the only place that we pronounce Z as Z and not
Google
Z.
It. Most of the world pronounces Z. I just was at my sister's house in New Hampshire, so we happened to Google this. And you guys are the oddballs out on the Z.
There are no other countries. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not
right. You heretic, you.
I'm
wow, this has been really cool, Lee. Like, I'm living kind of the nomad lifestyle, and I'm really enjoying it, but it has taken me quite a number of months to get used to that, hey, it's okay to read a book at 2 p.m. or watch a pre-recorded show or do something like that. Like, my boss isn't going to get on my case, and I will be working tonight or, you know, some other time during the day.
I break my day up into two shifts. I actually take a cat nap around 5:30, 6 o'clock. And then I get up, have dinner, and then I might work till 1 o'clock in the morning. That's how I break my day up. I mean, it just, I don't start at a normal time. And I've been freelance most of my life, so this adjustment was a little bit easier for me than most people. But, you know, you have to learn in this day and age to be your own hunter and your own gatherer. And not too many people are built to do that, but they're going to be forced to make that change. And that's coming soon.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think what I do is I split my day up somewhat similar to you do, Brad, I guess. I mean, I don't know about the cat nap in the midday, but I do take a break. Like, I start slowing down, like 3, 4. I'm like, you know, I'm not productive. So there's no, like, why try to work here? I'll wake
well,
up
you're
super
young.
Early.
You'll get that nap in.
Right. At some point, you look forward to the napping part.
Well, hopefully later rather than sooner, I can fill that time. I can fill that time gap with a nap. It's just as productive. But yeah, so, same exact thing for me.
What else do you want to share while we're on the podcast tonight? Because I find your story fascinating. I find you an adventurer, an entrepreneur, somebody who's always moving and dodging. You're a great business person. You're wise. You're sharp. You're a nomad. What else do you want to talk about tonight?
Well, first of all, thank you. That's great to hear from you specifically. As far as what I want to share, I guess, I don't know, it's hard to say. We talked about Publishizer. Like, I truly love Publishizer and what we're doing. And the people that we work with, the
Here's
authors, I
answer.
Think that's great.
Here's one you can answer. You seem to be a book reader. So what are some of the coolest, most relevant, interesting books that you recommend?
Yeah. All right. The way I love to read books, I guess, since this is a question, like I always break my books up into fiction and nonfiction. Like I have to read, like I'll probably read 2 fiction books to every nonfiction, but I do love nonfiction. I read like so many, but maybe the most recent one I've read nonfiction wise is Dave Kirpin. Dave Kirpin wrote The Art of People, and people have said that it is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie for today's society or for these times. So he pretty much like repurposed, like, and what I was saying earlier, like it, like I did read How to Win Friends and Influence People like a long time ago, and then I read Dave's book, and I'm like, yeah, I got the same exact takeaway from this thing. But I think he took the same principles that Dale Carnegie had in that book, and he repurposed them for like today's people or today's generation, and it completely connected with me, and it was relevant, and I can see why people like made that connection. So that's definitely a good read. Dave Kirpin is a 3-time best-selling author, right. And this is his new book. So definitely a good book to check out.
Okay, I'm looking at it on Amazon, so that's a good one. How about another one? One more.
I mean, a pretty popular one is going to be Essentialism. That's basically one for like productivity and finding focus in everything you do. I kind of live by one specific book. It's called Traction. Traction is a pretty, I forget the author's name, but I put it in my bag next to my laptop pretty much every day, and I'll read stuff out of it. And I'll use tips and tricks to make sure that not only like what I'm doing with like the company I'm working with, or like my life, like it's basically how to gain traction in like via rapid experimentation and trying new things out and things that don't work before. Try something different and see how that path works. It's like about trajectories to reaching your goal.
Is that Traction, Get a Grip on Your Business by Gino Wickman?
I don't think so. Let me see if I can.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find a name for that one.
Yeah, that sounds like a great book. How any startup can achieve explosive customer growth.
Yeah, that's it. By Gabriel. Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I read that one so much, I always come back to it. That's a good one. So those are 2 nonfiction books. Maybe a fiction book. I'm always going to go back to like my favorite book, which is going to be a Stephen King. And I don't like how Stephen King repurposes like every single book out there. He writes so many, but like he has some good ones. Joyland by Stephen King is probably my favorite book ever. It's kind of like this coming of age story, and it's really great.
I'm that way with science fiction. I like biographies, but I love science fiction. And I I've read Frank Herbert, Heinlein, just love it. And I watch a lot of science fiction too. I drive my wife up a wall.
You drive your wife up a wall in general, not just with the TV.
Sci-fi channel again.
Right. Yes, are you here. Just a big kid?
Yeah,
right. Probably such a big deal. Just like crime stories. Like I used to be so into crime TV shows. A crime mystery is so popular. I think the books are the same way because they're so intriguing. So like I think I've read every Michael Connelly book out there, and crime is my thing. But I think sci-fi, like Brad, you must have read A Wrinkle in Time. I mean, that's just
timeless classic. Oh man, I love that. I read that as a kid. And I couldn't believe it. I especially the ending. The ending is killer. But I love A Wrinkle in Time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that book might have got me into reading because it was so good. It was such a long time ago.
What?
But there's no way you can't not read that book.
Wow, yeah. Amazing.
I read it as a kid. I was like blown away.
All right, guys, we can go on all night.
Yes, we can.
It's actually 7:49 p.m. Toronto time, so I'm old. It's getting to be my bedtime. I didn't get the nap that Brad caught this afternoon. And so, you know, I haven't had dinner. But what a fascinating topic. I'm looking forward to the Millennials edition of Journeys to Success. If there's going to be other stories like Lee in there, I want to read them, and I want to find out more about what he's doing and what millennials
are. People aren't going to be able to put it down. I got to tell you, we've got everybody from entrepreneurs like Lee to someone who's an entrepreneur who built his entire business in the vegan sector because he's passionate about veganism. I have one woman who had to get out of a relationship that was abusive, wound up in jail, and now she has a spa that is. And employs 11 people. I mean, I could go on and on. We have amazing stories. And I look forward to it releasing next month.
Amen. Well, thanks, guys. What an interesting show. And you got me all excited. Now it's 8 o'clock at night. I feel like I should go sell something to somebody or something.
So email Lee. Lee at publicizer.com. Just reach out. Even if you're in the middle of about to do your book, or you're thinking about doing your book, just reach out.
Or you know someone who wants to do a book.
Yeah, get started. Because from the time you have the idea in your head to implementation to launching, you'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. Just reach out right now, no matter where you are in the cycle, lee@publicizer.com.
Have a great day, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Journey to Success Radio. If you or anyone you know would like to be interviewed for the show, email Tom at tom2tall.com for details.